We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another post-match edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. I'm joined by my regular Neil Shard to discuss a 1-0 win, which someone on this podcast predicted last week being the case. I don't know who it was, Neil, but welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. Thank you for having me. Yeah, you okay, Jack?
Good
with your prediction.
Yeah, oh, do you know what? I was watching it, and at the end, I was like, "What? I couldn't remember if it was me or you that predicted 1-0."
And it was you. I went 2-1. I think you went 1-0 or something.
Yeah. I didn't get the score though. I said Martinelli, who surprisingly had a bit of a quiet game, and we'll get into why that might have been. Not a poor one, but a little bit of a quiet one. But always a tough place to go, Selhurst Park. I was very nervous about it. I think it was because of the long build-up and seeing all the football over the weekend. Some great games to laugh at over the weekend, which was nice. But you've got to do your business at the end of the day, haven't you? And sometimes it's nice to know that you've already done it, and then you can enjoy the other games a little bit more, like I was saying to you offline. But a massive win, Neil. Palace is an old school stadium. It's a difficult place to go. The crowd really gets behind them. Roy Hodgson's always got on well drilled, I think. They've got some really tricky players, Eze being the main one at the moment that really worried me going into this game. Once again, Neil, he set up in very similar fashion. Obviously, Timber was out. But other than that, and Tomiyasu coming in, it was the same again. And it kind of, when we discussed it on the last podcast, I re-listened to us because I wanted to remind myself of what we discussed. And we both felt he'd revert in this game. We said, okay, he's done that because of Forrest. I think maybe I emphasised it a bit more, and I was wrong because of the deep block that Forrest played. But clearly, we're playing away from home. We knew Palace were going to come out much more than what Forrest did. And he once again went with the same sort of lineup. I thought, to give him credit, I think Partey has looked terrific in the lineup, and I'm really, I don't know if proud is the right word, but I'm really sort of admiring how he's able to play in this sort of multifaceted position from the right, because we laud Zinchenko for doing it from the left, and it's not really something we've done a lot with Thomas Partey. We didn't do it much in pre-season. I think we did it once or twice at the end of last season, and we all thought, well, that's quite interesting. And we did it with Kivior at left back, and we thought that was quite interesting, and it worked, and it didn't work, but we didn't really put too much emphasis on it being a long-term thing. I know you don't love lineup questions, but my theory on it is that once Zinchenko was out, I had this belief that he doesn't really believe anyone can do the same role from the left-back position. Like, no one's got the technical ability to really do what Zinchenko does. And I know Timber played, but he didn't really play that role, because if he did, he wouldn't have played Partey in the last game and inverted him against Forest, because Timber was on the left. Felt like Timber was much more playing the Tomiyasu role, where he was kind of tucking in as the third centre-back, getting up and back and forth when he could, but not being that player that's, you know, on the ball, you know, 1,000 passes a game kind of thing like Zinchenko was, whereas Partey is very much that player. And my theory on it is, out of everyone, Thomas Partey is the most comfortable at inverting and being on the ball and mimicking that Zinchenko role. So I get the feeling that it may be Partey or Zinchenko. And maybe he's also looked at it and gone, out of the back six that started last season, I'm including Ramsdale in that, so let's say the back five, so the back four plus Partey, who sat in that deep role, who are the two players that have the biggest fitness issues? And it's Zinchenko and Partey. And in my head, I'm saying, maybe he's looked at it and gone, there's going to be times where I'm only going to be able to play one of you. And if it is, one of you's going to invert, the other one's not going to be playing. And I'm just wondering, that doesn't necessarily mean Zinchenko plays and Partey doesn't, because Partey can obviously fill a different role in the centre of midfield. But that is my best theory on it, rather than thinking that, you know, we're just dropping Gabriel Some people have called it, you know, we're dropping Gabriel because of his ball playing abilities. And I think there might be something to that a little bit too. But that doesn't really make sense for games like this today, I don't think. I just wonder what your thoughts are. Do you think it's working? Because we're definitely not, you know, at peak level or anything like that, like we were maybe at the early stages last season.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great theory, and it just could be spot on, Jack. I don't know. It's a hard one at the minute, but it's plausible. So it's a good one, Jack, to think that way. Could well be the reason. I saw Gabriel out, and I panicked. I put it on the WhatsApp group and thought, oh, no, is he seriously? This doesn't bode well. But then I thought that would be ridiculous to let him go. Absolutely doesn't make any sense at all. There's no common sense about it. I mean, you know, unless the player himself is saying, oh, I want to go and I've been attracted by the soccer or whatever it is. But I can't see it, because when you saw him come on later on, and then his emotions about being there and getting into the game, I think he's one of the last people that want to leave this club. He's really an intrinsic player, and he's so deeply committed by the looks of it. All his actions say otherwise. So no, I don't think it is that. So your theory is probably is plausible, and it could be quite right. Yeah, it could be that he wants to try this different system. I mean, look, the age of the traditional left back and right back, as far as Arteta is concerned, seems to be a thing of the past. This is why. I mean, Tierney hasn't featured now at all, has he? And I think he's definitely.
Wasn't in the squad again, was he? He didn't travel.
No, he wasn't even on the sub. So no. I think that is more of a reasonable thought to have, that he's on his way out. It can't be part of his plans. It just can't be. He's not even on the bench anymore. But I thought again, I was disappointed at Trossard. I didn't even get a look in yesterday. I'm thinking, I just don't understand it. I find that a hard one to grasp. He's such a great player, and I just don't understand why, especially yesterday, where we were finding it hard to break them down, even in the latter stages. I think he would have been a good bet to have on, but he just didn't feature. But you know what? I think you're right. I think Partey really impressed me yesterday. I wasn't sure in the first game, but yesterday he looked in such control. Do you remember when he was at his peak in the midfield? He just looked like that again. He just looked in utter control. He reminds me so much of when Partey's playing like that. He's another Saliba. They're very cool, and they're very confident, and they're very calm. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter what kind of break the opponent is having, and the pressure that they're putting on you. They just seem to be able to control the situation perfectly. So I think it works. I'm going to be interested to see now, because obviously Zinchenko came on and he looked fresh to me. He looked pretty sharp. So my gut feeling is Zinchenko will play against Fulham. So let's see what he does with Partey on that day. But I thought, look, all being said, we got the job done. Yeah, it wasn't the prettiest. I don't think we are in top gear. Jack, you are 100% right. I think we're still languishing in third or fourth at very best. So I think there's more to come. But the main thing is, going away to Palace, as you said, is a very oppressive stadium. We've fallen foul there before, and we turned them over easily last season. I don't think the differences of this season and last season are very. It's a massive contrast. Last season we were just so unbelievable right from the get go. This season it's slightly different. Although we still got two wins out of two, very much like last season. Very different, and I like it. Although it's like it's squeaky bum time, I like it, because I felt we peaked too early last season. I'm hoping that we build up this time slowly, and peak right at the right time. So let's see what happens. Massive 3 points, very important.
Yeah, you also can't forget, Neil, that we didn't have an ACL injury to Timber. I know we didn't have him last season, but to a player like that, we didn't have Zinchenko out. We didn't have Jesus out at the start. They're both pivotal to the start to our season, and I believe both are still starters when they're fully fit. So every season has its own challenges, and you know, it is about getting the result. Like for example, the red card that we'll get to shortly. It just, you know, every game has its own challenges, and you know, I could tell Arteta was frustrated at the end of the game. I think mainly with the officiating, but with his shortness, and I'm really happy kind of comments, but. I think he's right. You know, you've got to find a way to win. No one's going to feel sorry for us. So we've got to find a way to win. And I thought we did that pretty well, to be honest. And even I've rewatched some of the Palace game of last season, and it's funny. There was real points where we were under at 1-0 where we were really under the cosh for a while with that Palace game last season, and Zaha was being really tricky with us, and we kind of just wanted a release ball. We ended up getting a late goal from a deflected shot from Saka to make it 2-0, and we were like, okay, big win that is, and it was the first game of the season. And sometimes the result skews our mindset of like how good we necessarily think we were, or maybe that we didn't think the game was as close. And to be honest, this was, to me, was really a 2-0 game too, because, well, I mean, let's start with it. I mean, Eddie Nketiah, in the first half, I thought we were the better side. You know, that they had some moments, but I did think they never really created any big openings, I don't feel. I actually feel, unless I'm mistaken, their best chance was the late chance from Mitchell that went over the bar when we were down to 10 men. I don't really remember. I think they had two shots on target, but I'm not really remembering them or Aaron Ramsdale having to make a pivotal save in this game as such. Do you remember as such? Maybe from a header there was one, but I don't remember any sort of big saves at Ramsdale.
No, I think there was a big one. There was one where he parried it away. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, that was he parried it away to Mitchell in the last second. That was, or the last couple of minutes. That was one. But I don't remember them, like, they weren't peppering our goal, even when we were down the town. I just felt we sat too deep. But in the first half, it was really about Eddie Nketiah, whose movement was terrific. I think we do have to say, before we obviously maybe get a little bit critical on him for his finishing, especially on the second one, I thought his movement and his work rate in terms of his link-up play, all stuff that we questioned with Eddie, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was really, really good, actually. I was actually really impressed. I was frustrated because he's got to take one of those two chances, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I think we're seeing a better Eddie Nketiah, I think, this season. Do you not think? So far. His end product, yes, questionable, but maybe that will come. I mean, I don't know how long Jesus is out for. I can see Jesus coming straight back in as soon as he's fit, by the way. I don't think he's going to think, well, no, Eddie's playing well, I'm going to keep him in. As much as he loves Eddie, that is completely clear. You know that he's a big favourite of Arteta's. But, you know, credit where credit's due. We always do that on this pod. You know, we may not favour certain players because of what we see. But when they do play well, we'll always credit them. And I thought he was fantastic. He caused them problems. I mean, that first one that I remember where he turned. I mean, there was a bit of a battle for the ball to be freed. I think Saka was involved and a couple of other players was involved on the side there. But then as soon as Eddie got it, his turn was terrific. And the fact that he managed to get a shot on, it was a tough, tough manoeuvre. And he was unlucky, hit the post. It was just a little bit...
That was unlucky, yeah.
...wide, and I thought, wow, that's one of the best moves I've seen Eddie do as an Arsenal player, to be fair. And
it was that one was a lovely ball from Rice, wasn't it? I think it was a ball from Rice.
Yeah, that one. Yes, correct. It was. Or was that a different one, actually?
It might have been the second one that was a through ball from Rice. That might have been the through ball.
Yeah,
that,
oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah,
I'm trying to rewatch it now.
I've only watched it once. It's hard to remember.
Oh, that was Saka. Sorry, that was Saka for the hit in post. It was Saka that made that through ball. So it must have been Rice for the second one. I'll rewatch that.
It was Rice for the second, yeah. The second one, again, it was good movement. But, yeah, Eddie normally finishes those. That was a surprising. That's the irony of it. He normally is very good at those. He's, you know, the poacher, the fox in the box or the poacher's goal or whatever you want to call it. But his finishing there will let him down, and that was unfortunate. But the first one, I think he was unlucky. You can't criticise his finishing on the first one. That was just unlucky. I thought he did everything right on the first one. Yeah. And that's encouraging when we've been kind of debating. And I'm not so much you maybe, but I've always thought, don't we need someone? Don't we need that striker in there? But if he starts converting more of those, then maybe we don't need that player. And we've got it in Eddie. And when Jesus is back, you know, even if Jesus isn't playing for tactical reasons, we've got a player like Eddie to bring on. So I was happy with him yesterday. I wasn't displeased.
And it wasn't dissimilar from a Jesus type game. Lots of chances that he probably should finish, doesn't. But his link up play was good. I think what I've been impressed with Eddie is his link-up play, to be honest, and his ability to bring others in, because I always felt he didn't have that in his game. So when I'm watching games like this, and I feel like he's really someone that can stand up, I thought he was a headache with his back to goal for the defenders. I thought he did really well, you know. And to be honest, if that one that hits the post goes in, we're talking about probably a man of the match performance for him, really. I think he was almost at that level, but he's got to take that one. The second one specifically, the chip isn't really on. So I found it really frustrating at the time.
Too close, wasn't he?
It was too close. It was never happening. Even Ian Wright wouldn't be able to make that chip, and he was the chip specialist, wasn't he? And he was. I just felt, I was like, that's frustrating. And obviously at the time, you know, hindsight makes you feel a little bit better about it. But at the time, you felt like those could be really costly chances. I think I was texting, I was like, this is going to cost us, isn't it? And thankfully, it didn't. And to Eddie's full credit, it was largely because of him that it didn't, because he was part of making that or winning that penalty. But just a couple of other things in the first half, just before we sort of go on. I thought Rice, this is his best performance, definitely. And another player that really had to do multiple roles in this game. He played in the six for a lot of the game, but he was, you know, if you look at him, he had a lot of chances that he was creating again. He created the penalty that Eddie won, of course. So he was getting forward into that eight position as well. He's just showing that, but I thought he looked so silky on the ball. His ability to spread the play quickly, his work rate, his engine, he looked fit. That's what I say. This is the first game I've watched him where I thought Declan Rice looks fully fit. Maybe he's still got more to come, to be honest, but I haven't really felt all season he's had a bit of a staggered pre-season that he's looked fully fit. He's always looked like he's wavering towards the end of games and things like that. But there's a lot more to come from him, isn't there, Neil?
Oh, yeah, 100%. We were saying that, you know, he's one of the players that's getting better each game. He's not a fitness peak yet when we started the season, because he started a bit late in the summer with his training. And he can only get better. And oh my gosh, he's starting to show, isn't it? He's going up a gear each game, maybe. And there is a lot more to come. And Arteta and him both know this. He himself was interviewed. I know if you saw that clip that Michael sent. And he does want to be more involved in the attacking moves, to be fair. He's happy to do anything. He said that. He's really happy. First and foremost, he's just happy to be at Arsenal. He really is. He's enjoying his time there. He's reveling in it. And that can only be a positive for us, because we need players like that. And he's a leader. I think Odegaard is, I said on the last pod that I think he's the right choice, because he leads by example. I never knew that would be a thing. I always liked the old barking orders and being very vocal, but you don't need to be. Odegaard's proving that point. But I can see Rice at some point in the future becoming the captain. I really can see it. He's just got it in him. He's that kind of player. He's that kind of person. He's got that personality about him. But yeah, tremendous. He was involved in so much. He was so versatile in his abilities. That's what I was seeing yesterday. And again, another one, he looked more in control, confident, and just strong, really strong. And you just felt that with him in your team, you've got something there who does not only adds massive amounts to the defensive side of the game, but also can chip in with any kind of attacks. But he definitely wants to do that. He wants to score goals. He has said that. He says, I'm a midfielder at the end of the day. And he goes, look, I'm happy to play at the six. But he goes, I do want to be more involved. I can play, obviously, he can play in both the positions, in the eight and the six. But he says, I do want to be involved in more of the attacking game. And I think we'll see it. And I think it won't be, it'll be quite, I think it'll only be a matter of time before he starts banging them in. He had a chance there against Forest. He was unlucky. So, you know, you're on mute, by the way, Jack.
Sorry, yeah. He hit the post, and then the one saved by Turner. Yeah, he got forward.
That's
a lot.
Right.
And this game, he was a bit more the creative side, wasn't he? Because obviously he created the goal, the penalty, but it also created a big chance for Eddie and Ketter as well. But yeah, I thought he looked really, really good. And it's interesting you say about Odegaard and him, because they look like they're really close in a lot of the sort of celebrations and the discussions pre and post game. But also what I noticed when we were down to 10 men is they were proper laying into each other, Neil. They were Rice, I think, he won a header. And this is when we were really under the cost that last 15 minutes. or so, really, until Jorginho and Zinchenko came on and just killed him with passes, but and sort of took the pressure off a little bit. But Rice just headed a ball out, and Odegaard really laid into him, and they were having a bit of back and forth. And at the end, they were it was really interesting. I was watching it. I was like, I love that.
Perfect. Yeah,
holding each other accountable, you know. But at the end, they were all smiles and chatting with each other. But you could tell to me that that they seemed to have created quite a strong sort of relationship there, and they're constantly talking to each other on and off the pitch. And like you said, I think eventually what we're seeing is one's the technical leader and the other's going to be more the vocal leader, a bit like Xhaka was in a way.
Xhaka, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. In that sense, he is obviously a completely different player, and I think he offers more than Xhaka. I think there's no doubt about it.
Just to interrupt, but you know what you just said there about them? I didn't actually see that, but if that's the case, that's fantastic, because it shows the hunger in the team. This is exactly what we want.
Yeah.
I now again will do my usual the good old days and throwback. But Tony Adams was like that. He would go mental at his players, absolutely mental at them.
Yeah.
And they were sometimes a lot of the players were scared of him. They've gone on record in the interviews and said we were scared of him. And that's what you want. And scared in a good way, not in a, oh my God, I don't want to be at my job today. In a good way, because it's kind of motivational. It's like, yeah, he's seen me make a mistake or do something which, you know, he wouldn't have wanted me to do. And he's telling me, he's letting me know, not keeping quiet about it. You know, this nicey-nicey stuff about us, I think he's going now. We've become a stronger team. We've got those powerful players in that are going to take not going to be messed around with. And that's why now we'll be able to face the teams that used to really out-muscle us. We weren't physically enough and all the rest of it. We've got all of that now. We've got big, strong players, tall players. I mean, Havertz as well, which I'm sure you can talk about. You know, if nothing else, he's a big player. And I think that's what we needed in our team. We needed that height. We needed that strength. We've got it. And I'm so glad. If what you're saying is what was happening, I'm all for it. Mate.
Well, you remember it with like Vieira and Lauren, and they used to have bust ups quite a lot, didn't they? And things like that. Yeah. So, and this wasn't anything to that level, but it was just good to see, you know, them sort of checks and balances almost on each other. And like, hey, I think Odegaard was just frustrated he didn't take the ball down because we weren't holding the ball very much at the time. But yeah, at halftime, I remember sitting there thinking, I actually felt, pretty decent performance, but felt we should have been going 1-0 or 2-0 up at that point. And what you got to remember, I think I remember City, when they played at Palace last season, I think they won from a late penalty, or something like that, and didn't create very much at all in the game. This game, we did really, if you look at it, there was three or four really big chances on our side, and bar the late one they got when we were down to 10 men, I don't think they really created a ton, despite the fact they had about 14 shots on goal, but a lot of them were from distance for them. There weren't big ones. And they got a good midfield 2-0. You know, I mean, Liverpool on the verge of, I don't think it's close yet, but they want to buy Decore for about 70 million. He's their central midfielder that played in this game, so he's no mug. Eze, obviously, I think, is a future England international. I know he's been in the squad once or twice, but he's not really played, but I think he's terrific. So they've got some really, really good players. And like we were saying, I think they'll be a really good side and a really tough side at Selhurst Park. But in the second, we knew we had to take a chance. Definite penalty for you, Neil?
Our penalty?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. 100%.
Some people, I thought it too, but some people said, oh, the ball's gone, or, you know, but he's taken him out, hasn't he?
No, it doesn't matter if the ball's gone, he's taken him out. If it was going to be avoided, he needed to retract his arms. It's very difficult to do that in that short space of time. It's impossible, really, if you think about it. No, 100% the penalty. The reason why there was a delay was because they thought that Partey had fouled. Yep.
And what do you think about that?
Honestly, if it had been another day, it might have gone off against us from another ref, possibly. But I think there is nothing wrong with, I mean, players do it these days, don't they? The blocking movement.
Yeah.
They do it any part of the game. I don't know. I'm not 100%. I'm not going to be the biased Arsenal fan and say, no, never. That was never a foul. But all I will say is I was a little bit concerned that it will go against us.
Yeah. Do you think? I don't think it was necessary. That was my frustration. I think Partey could have just put his body there. No, yeah. Exactly. He would have got there. Eddie was gone. He was gone
so fast.
It was like the, you know, the Ben White holding of the hand thing against Leicester.
Yeah, that's right.
in the even though I thought it was soft, and this would have been extremely soft to rule out, correct. I just thought it wouldn't have changed anything, Ben.
It wouldn't have made any difference. It would have made no difference.
And you that know, was my frustration.
It stopped him from getting to him. What would we get into him? No one would have reached him.
No,
he was just,
exactly.
He was just electric to
just
it.
Just be a bit more subtle about it, maybe.
So his part, the goalkeeper, definitely penalty. That's a penalty outright, 100%. The debate was about the part, but no, he wouldn't have made any difference. All right, so even if we say Partey did foul him, it wouldn't have made any difference. So all day long, and then yeah. Odegaard was fabulous. I thought, what is he doing? Does he look nervous? What's he doing that for? Why is he dithering and doing all the dancing around? But he was calm, cool, calm and collected. I know the question you're going to ask. Go on.
Well, do you think it was pre-planned? Is my question, because I've rewatched that moment, and Arteta has said already that he believe Saka's the penalty taker, and that was to sort it out on the pitch. But if you watch it, there was no doubt in my mind that Saka looked very, very happy to give the ball to Odegaard. It wasn't like, you see in some teams that I'm grabbing a ball off this. I mean, Odegaard's not like that anyway. But it looked like it very much came from Saka rather than coming from Odegaard when I rewatched it. But I just wonder what your thoughts are on that, and if you think it's going to be something that we're going to see in the future and Odegaard's going to become a penalty taker.
Do you know what? When you asked it on the WhatsApp group, I said, I don't really care as long as it goes in the net, who takes the penalties, right? Which, in a way, is true. Who cares? Does it score? But now, I'm wondering, now Arteta's saying he didn't know anything about it and it was all happened on the pitch. But I wonder if it was pre-planned, Jack, because there's this talk about the fact that their goalkeeper actually was surprised when he realised Odegaard was second. He even looked over at the bench, almost like made possibly his his coach to think, hang on a minute, we've been planning a penalty potentially against Saka, and now it's Odegaard. I wonder if it was to throw them off. And I wonder if this is going to be part of a new tactic, very much similar to his lineups.
Yeah.
So it's just a thought that came across my mind. I could be completely wrong, and it could just be something that happened on the pitch. It was spur of the moment. All right, mate, do you mind if I take it? And Saka's go, yeah, sure. Mm. Because he was holding the ball initially, wasn't he, Sam?
Yeah, well, they were delaying it for a while, weren't they?
But there was no kind of friction or anything to suggest, no, I want to take it. What do you mean you want to take it? He just handed it very happily to him. Yeah. I'm just thinking maybe was it a quick tactic to throw the keeper off? I don't know. If that is the case, that's brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And what you've got to remember is the keeper has also played in a few England internationals too. So you practice that stuff in internationals, don't you?
Very good.
So a few qualifiers there. It looked like something Saka felt, this is not my penalty today or something. That's what it felt like. But so it'd be interesting to see. And that's good, you know. I mean, you remember back in the day, Henri never used to take a penalty that he got fouled upon. He'd give it to someone.
Yes.
But obviously, Saka wasn't the case here. But I like it if someone's not feeling it. It takes a certain sort of like... Well, John texted me and he went, Saka's bottled the penalty. And I went, that's definitely happened.
No.
I think he's almost shown some humbleness here and some maturity, you know, to be like, you know, maybe he wasn't feeling it, or maybe he feels like it's, you know, maybe he's got his number, this goalkeeper, or whatever. I don't know. You don't know what goes on in those training sessions with England and things like that. So it was just interesting. I was like, oh, that's
it. It was interesting. Let's allay any fears. It's nothing to do with confidence. Saka is not that player. He's not that kind of player. If he was, I mean, come on, after that horrific rubbish he got after the Euros, and then he stepped up to take that penalty. Was it against? Was it Man U? Or what was the first one? Can you remember?
Was it against Liverpool, Alisson?
Liverpool.
Liverpool. The first one, but that was definitely relatively early in the season.
Really important, and massive statement. I remember the Peter Jury commentary on it.
Yeah, terrific.
It was very iconic now, almost. So, he's not that kind of player. He's not the kind of player to be feeling, you know, cowardly or anything like that. No chance. That is not what Saka's about. He's not built that way. So I just think it might have been it could have been a strategic move to put the goalkeeper off. I don't know. Whatever it was, it worked. And it was a great penalty at the end as well.
And Odegaard, in fairness, has probably been our best penalty taker throughout pre-season because he's been doing those penalty shootouts and everything. No, he's looked really terrific from the box. And I started getting, I'm a big numbers guy with the attacking four, and I'm like, wow, if Odegaard starts getting a few depends. It's gonna really do his numbers the world of good. But in the end, you know, it's just about the collective, isn't it? And the main thing was that we scored the pen. And that settled a little bit, because I was very anxious about this game. I think it was a long time coming because of the weekend, and I just felt that settled us a bit. And I think this is where I have my biggest criticism, Neil. So the first yellow card for Tomiyasu is given for time wasting. Now, whilst I think Tomiyasu, and I really am frustrated with I think the journalist is a disgrace that interviews Mikel Arteta, because I don't know if you watched the full interview, but they basically call out the time frame, and they try to do like a getcha comment to him, and they ask a question like, well, I just wondered if you think the yellow card was a yellow card, and if he was time wasting, and he said no, Arteta basically sort of poo-pooed it and said, no, I don't think he was. He went, well, he held the ball for 23 seconds. And that is wrong. Kai Havertz held the ball for a while and then gave it to Tomiyasu, who basically stood looking for someone to throw it to for about 7 or 8 seconds and got booked. So it wasn't really his booking to have. But I do think there's a collective question here to ask why we were trying to slow the game down at that point. It was 55, 60 minutes into the game. Was it just a moment thing for you and we just scored and we were just trying to take the sting out of the game because maybe, you know, not get their crowd up? I feel at 1-0 up, with that amount of time left in the game and in a game that I felt we were pretty in control of, I felt we've got to be pushing for the next goal at that point. And I did feel between the first goal and the red card, I felt we were a little bit slow with our play, maybe mimicking the second half against Forest a little bit. And we can't be like that, can we, Neil? I mean, like, I don't know if you felt that. Did you feel that?
I actually didn't. Okay. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't. I was too involved in us, you know, making sure we don't concede. I don't know. You could be right, Jack. You could be right. But it's just so unlike us. It's just so unlike
it
us.
It is unlike us.
It's something we're just not known to do, unless we're really under the cosh and we're trying to hold on to a lead against a great team, potentially like Man City. But even then, it just goes against the grain of what we are. We're always trying to get that. In fact, we've been scolded for not doing that when we should be, and we're trying to get another goal. I remember in the Wenger days, we used to do it. Wenger never allowed that kind of tactic or strategy. Yeah. He always just didn't matter. He just wanted to go and score goals.
Yeah.
So I because of that, I wasn't really paying attention, maybe, and I didn't really see it. I mean, on that particular one, though, he took one for the team, as far as I'm concerned, because it was two other players involved in that throw-in, Jack. It wasn't just Havertz. Wasn't there someone, even Rice, I think, collected the ball at one point?
Yeah, there was a little bit of back and forth with the ball. It definitely felt like, but at the very least, we weren't in a rush to take it.
And if you notice, and you've seen it back, when Tomiyasu finally gets it, there's no one to throw it at. And he's actually trying to, he's pivoting his body to see who can I actually throw the ball to. He was just unlucky. He was a scapegoat, as far as I'm concerned. And a little bit before that passage of play, I think Partey was doing a bit of it as well. So I think the ref already had it in his mind that, right, I'm going to watch you guys now, see what goes. I think Tomiyasu was just unlucky. It was him that had the ball. Someone had to get the yellow card, and it was because he had the ball at the time. He gave it to him. I don't think Tomiyasu did anything wrong.
No, I don't think he did either.
So, just unlucky.
And I agree with you. I just felt maybe in that time frame, the onus could have been a little bit more on us. And I actually feel, we'll talk about the second yellow card in a second, but I actually feel when we went down to 10 men, I don't think it was necessary for us to sit so deep for so long when we were down to 10 men. Like we've seen in the past, Wenger teams sometimes play better with 10 men, you know, when we were at our peak. We're a good enough footballing team. And I think Arteta got his subs right. But if I could make a criticism, I felt he could have made them earlier. I felt he could have brought Zinchenko on earlier, Jorginho on earlier, and we would have maintained or regained control quicker. And that was my one frustration, because I felt like as soon as they came on, it was like a light bomb. Just
oh my God, they were great, weren't they?
And they're the perfect players for that type of game. You know, they know exactly how to play against a man with a man less. But the second one, Neil, is really disgraceful. The reason it's disgraceful is Jordan Ayew, the player it was on, literally 5 minutes earlier had pulled down Saka in what is a booking in anyone's book, which would have been a red card for him. And the ref overlooks it And then he just, the frustration here, Neil, is I don't even think it's a foul. I don't think he actually touches him, does he?
It's so, if he did, it's very minimal, really minimal. I mean, they keep going on about the letter of the law, but I've seen much harsher, more obvious shirt pulls than that. It's almost as if he just got a glancing touch at his cloth of the shirt. It's, and even he looks surprised. He's like, what? No. I thought that was very, very harsh. I've seen, on another day, no one would have given that. Wouldn't have been even fouled in some cases. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what the referee saw to give a foul there or to give a yellow there. It didn't make any sense. And even if it was a foul, it wasn't. I mean, come on. Players get fouled all the time. The ref isn't always pulling a yellow card out for it. He might have called foul, but not given the yellow. No need to give a yellow. So I thought that was really... I think Tomiyasu has been extremely, extremely unlucky on both.
Yeah. And I thought he was growing into the game.
Yeah, Tomiyasu. He was actually doing right.
Yeah, because he's obviously not been fit and he's just come back from a big knee injury. He's had rotten luck with injuries. And he looked, when I was watching him in the game, I felt like I was starting to notice him just some shoots. Because let's be honest, Tomiyasu is incredible how far the squad's moved on. 18 months ago, maybe a little bit more, Tomiyasu was like this revelation coming into the team and a transformation player. We thought he was player of the season until he got injured that first season. He was fantastic, wasn't he? And if he can get back to those levels, he can offer us something really, really, really good from that left. But I think he's still actually better in the position he was in today, surprisingly. But it's a ridiculous decision. And what a ridiculous rule it is. I understand you can't review yellow cards on VAR because it would be too many. But if a yellow card leads to a red card, it's got to be reviewed. How can you review so that? Stupid. It's just there's no logic to it. There's no sense to it. And I think that was probably partially you can't challenge it. It's just unbelievable to me. You know, I think it's just a ridiculous decision. They've got to come away with it. And the problem, I think, I'll say frustration is, you know, you see the lack of consistency in one game within 5 minute period. And I'll say it's like, well, where's the line here? Because if you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, how we end up with 10 men and they didn't, it's just unbelievable.
It was quick. You know what it reminded me of? And I know it's a stupid analogy or comparison, but I remember when Martinelli got two yellow cards in the space of 6 seconds or something stupid. But Tomiyasu's was fast, wasn't it? It was within, what, the two, 7 or 8 minutes apart? And do you know what? The point you made about him, I thought he was great when he first came. Do you remember he literally just stepped off the plane and he just took to it amazingly well? I don't think he's had a fair chance to really get back into any kind of form because we've had players now to fill in his position. You know, when Ben White came, he initially came as a centre-back, not a right winger, a right-back or a right winger or whatever you want to call them these days. It's obviously the traditional sense. Arteta doesn't believe it anymore. But that position was really going to be Tomiyasu's, remember? So even when he came back from injury, he couldn't even get a look in because Ben White was there. I think there is still a good player in him, but I just don't think he gets a fair chance. He doesn't get consistent play. Attain that, but I did see a little bit of what we saw at the beginning of his tenure at Arsenal yesterday. I'm happy with him.
Yeah, I think his ability on the ball is slightly underrated. Like, I think people just think he's terrible on the ball and just think he's like a stand-up defender and very good at that. But I actually think his ability on the ball is definitely not technically to the level of, you know, a Timber or you know, certainly not a Zinchenko or even a White, but I do think he can offer something to the squad from that left back position at times, and definitely being the player to come on for a Zinchenko when we need to hold on to a lead or whatever, or be a bit more defensively secure. I think we can really try. I think he's probably our best one-on-one defender in terms of fullback positions, I would say.
Oh, remember what he did to Salah? Do you remember?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
we also fit in another one as well. I can't remember who the other one was. Oh, Salah and another game, you know, another big team, and he did a really good job of them. Who was the other one?
Two
occasions anyway. It's my memory. I'm old now. Oh, who's that?
My little one's just woke up.
Oh, bless her.
She's lying on the couch. I'll be right there. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think I think he can offer something. Again, this sets him back a little bit, but I thought for some reason it's a 3-game ban, but it's not, it's a 1-game ban. So a one game ban is, you know, that's fine. I don't necessarily think he would have started in a home game anyway. So it's fine. But again, it's another thing to hit us with in terms of, you know, we've had a little bit of rotten luck again with injuries and suspensions in the first few games in comparison to other teams anyway. But at that point, I think we played 30 minutes without 11 men nil. We played 30 minutes from the 67th to the 97th minute. And I think, you know, there's positives and negatives. I felt we sat too deep for about 20 minutes, to be honest. It felt like it was not relentless, but I was just like, push up, because it was very deep. But at the same time, we didn't really concede any big chances. The biggest moments in that 30 minutes was Yeze possible penalty, which we were a little bit lucky on, I think we agree on. But like, I don't think it was a pen. I think he was looking for it. Without doubt, he was looking for it.
But he could have been given, Jack.
But it could have been given. Yeah. And I think what worked in our favour was he completely dove in the first half for a pen. Do you remember?
Yes.
And I think that might have worked.
That was in the referee's mind.
Yeah, should have been booked for that. I hate it when people don't get booked for dives. But... But yeah, Partey's a little silly, isn't he? Again, two little silly things he does. But little silly, again, where you shouldn't dangle the leg, because it gives the referee an opportunity to make a decision. And I, my heart was in my mouth at that point. I was just waiting for him to call it. Yeah. So we got a little bit there. But then until the 95th minute when Ramsdale parries and Mitchell balloons over the bar from a volley, they didn't really test the goal much.
In a chaotic way, we were in control, weren't we? And Rice was involved in a lot of that again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very
good. You know, we can single out all the defenders and the defensive work, and that was great. But Rice was involved in a lot of that as well. I think he was man of the match.
I think he was.
Was he given man of the
match? He got given man of the match, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go, then.
I think that's why he did the interviews at the end, which were really good to hear, you know, about how he was... He just felt like he was on it from the warm up. He said he was just ready for it, you know. Yeah. And he did. He looked like he was ready to run the game, really. And he looked much more confident on his ability to sort of spray the ball and be a bit more expansive with his play, you know, against like Forest and certainly against City. We felt maybe he was playing it within himself a little bit. I mean, this game, I felt like he was really becoming confident. And that's just, you know, it's only been a few games now. It's just, you know, it's
his second game, Jack.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, and Forrest was his first. I think I still believe that he was overwhelmed. He was literally a fan. I said it, and people might think I'm mad, but I felt that he was literally overwhelmed. He's so in love with being at this club. He's almost like, oh my God, I'm at Arsenal. I'm at a big club. It just, and again, I've always said it with all due respect to West Ham, but I just feel that, he's almost thinking, oh my God, is this really happening to me? And now he's settling down slowly, but surely. He's just going to be, I hate this money in football. I hate it, but he will be worth every penny that we have spent on the man. But we were in such control, Jack. It just looked like chaotic. I agree with you. I was thinking, oh my God, I've never seen our goal be peppered like this for a long time. This is ridiculous. We can't even get... The ball was just not coming out of our half, was it? It just was not moving. It was just constant, relentless. But we, in a weird way, were in control because defence, they set themselves so up. They just worked well together. They were well positioned. Every attack, you just saw us not lose our shape. I was just watching that and our shape was maintained throughout. And yeah, apart from that last gasp where I thought, oh my God, it's going to go, but he just ballooned it over. I mean, that was their best chance.
Yeah.
That was their best chance. So I think that's what Arteta said. He goes, he just said, we were in control. We were in control. And, you know, the fact that we had to play a third of the game with 10 men, I said, in a way, it's a bit of a testament that it shows a lot of character.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about us. The determination and the character of this team already this early in the season. Yeah, we haven't played as, I'd say, as pretty as we did when we started last season. Certainly not. But you're right. You know, we didn't have the enterprise of Zinchenko and Jesus. We haven't had that yet. Hopefully now soon that will come back. But we've done it in a different way. And we've still got 6 out of 6. And that's what counts.
Yeah, exactly. There's only 3 teams that have done it. Obviously, you know, you look at something like Brighton have been absolutely free-flowing at the start of the season. And City have looked pretty comfortable as they typically always do, but every game comes with challenges and you can only really focus on yourself. And our pre-season has been a little bit different. I think he's trying different things because of the absences from certain players. He's probably feeling he has to. And I think to a certain degree it's worked. I don't think we've created as many clear-cut chances as we would have liked in these two games. But I think overall our football's been pretty promising. I think there's something to really build on as well. But I'll tell you what really shows how far we've come is I thought Gabriel came on and was fantastic. But we used to do this in games where we were 1-0 up 18 months ago with 11 men at 1-0 up at 65 minutes, and we bring Rob Holding on and fall back into a deep block every game. Do you remember? And we just sit there and we'd be like, oh God, it's Rob Holding time again.
Yeah.
And now we're doing it because we're forced to do it because we're down to 10 men, and we're bringing on the likes of Gabriel, and you know, and that's how far the squad has sort of progressed and moved on, you know. And it does, when you look at the bench, we've really got some players there that didn't even get any minutes, you know. You got Smith Rowe, Trossard, Nelson sitting there on the bench, not able to get any minutes, you know. Zinchenko coming on for a few minutes, that kind of stuff is definitely the squad depth is looking really good with the likes of Jesus to still come back in, which is pretty incredible as well. But what are your thoughts on Havertz today? Again, I feel like there's definitely one really good chance outside the box. He created a chance for Martinelli early on as well. I feel like his role's a little bit harder to define in this system with Partey inverting. I feel like the left side is maybe what's suffering the most out of it. So I feel like Martinelli's a little quieter. Havertz is a little quiet because obviously we don't have Zinchenko sort of filtering the play from the left side. But obviously it's early days for Havertz, but he does feel like one that will take probably the most time to adjust out of the new signings. Do you have any concerns at the moment?
I don't have any concerns, but I think you just nailed it. I was trying to work out why was Martinelli so quiet or quieter? Why was Havertz? I still don't know what he's actually going to bring. I know he's going to bring something, but I don't exactly know what role he's going to. You know, what is his identity going to be at the club? We can see what Rice is going to offer. We could see straight away what Timber would have offered. In those first few minutes of the first game. Unfortunately, he's not going to be with us now, probably for the majority of all the season, but that is what it is now. But I don't know about Havertz. So I think, you know what, you've just said something which could make sense, because when we see Zinchenko come back in, and I think it will add a bit more balance to our play on both sides of the pitch. You know, again, with Forest, we were so right focused. We were so Saka until Martinelli did what he did for the assist for the first goal. I think we need that balance, Jack, because we're going to need the options from all around the pitch, especially against those harder teams. I mean, you know, I'm not saying Palace were a hard team to break down, and it shows. We only got the one goal, but you know what I mean. You know, the bigger Man Cities of this world, and even, you know, like Brighton at the moment, they're flying, aren't they? I think we need that balance, and I think Zinchenko, that's it. When he comes back and what he does, that's when we might be seeing a bit more things happening on the left hand side. I don't know where that will be a position, a chance for when Havertz could potentially play a part. For me personally, if you ask me, I think at the moment I think he'll be better to come on as a sub. I really do. Maybe that might work better for him. I just think at the moment, I don't know if it's because of the price. I would hate to think Arteta is doing it because of the price tag. But it's almost as if he's having to play him because he's 65 million. And I don't think he's actually found exactly what he can offer. But I'm not suggesting he won't offer. I think he will. But I don't know what that is yet. There is a player in him. There's a player that could potentially play and score goals for us. He can definitely be the holding player that we need. He did it, actually. At one point in the game, I don't know if you saw it a bit late on, he was used as a holding player, and he did it really well, and then he distributed the ball going forward. Yep. So that's the kind of stuff that, and I think that reminds me, when I saw that, it reminded me of what Giroud used to do. So I wonder if he could be that kind of player, but I just don't know, Jay. Maybe you know, but I don't have the answers. But I would, please, can we see Trossard on Saturday? That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's... I mean, I'm not concerned that Trossard's not starting, because like I said, I just think he probably sees him more of a, you know, an impact sub at this moment in time. But I just think there'll be so many opportunities where one of that front three or front four has to come out because of, you know, injury or being rested or suspension or whatever. Yeah, I think you'll see him a lot as the season progresses, and I'm not really that concerned, but I do agree. I think he's definitely got a real good case he should be started. I think Havertz's role is a little bit harder to understand where he's playing in this system currently, but I think it will become clearer if Zinchenko comes back in, to be honest, and we start to filter Partey into central midfield, or if he decides to remove Partey altogether, and which I don't necessarily think he'll do initially, but I think eventually the plan is to do that and play his three of Rice, Havertz, and Odegaard. I still think that's his long-term vision, because Rice, you saw today that Rice, or also yesterday, you saw that Rice was probably closest to the six that he's been for us so far, even though he's been playing higher up for us in different roles. But he played a lot of that role where he was really controlling the midfield from the base. And that is something that really Thomas Partey has only ever done for us for quite a while. And Rice looked supremely good, I thought, in it. Obviously, Partey inverting and helping, but no different from Zinchenko coming in on the other side for Partey and assisting him. So I think Rice is gonna grow into that role, and I think eventually that'll be. And you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I think it's looking at the players that not let us down, but we lost last season, or we lose continually. Zinchenko's most games in the Premier League since arriving for Man City is 27, and that was with Arsenal last season. It's the most Premier League games he's ever played. For Man City, he never played more than 20 Premier League games in a season. He was there for like 5 years. So, And even last season, he played 27 times for us. So I was like, Zinchenko was out quite a lot last season for us. Like, he was, you know, there was a month would go by and he was out and all this stuff. And Partey, I haven't looked at his set, but around the same numbers, right? He's never fully fit for a full season. So we've got to be able to rest those players. Ideally, we rest them rather than get them injured, right?
So, you know, you're right. Absolutely right. I just want to ask you a quick question. So you're saying, and I think there is something in that the midfield will be the Rice, Odegaard and Havertz. So where do you see Partey then? Do you think he'll become a sub, or he's just completely out of the scene?
I think the eventual move for Partey is, to eventually progress beyond it. I don't think we're there yet. I think this year we'll need Partey. You know, maybe he'll be just as important as he has been to us. But I think the goal, long-term vision, because Partey, what is he, 30 years old? I think the long-term vision for Thomas Partey. Okay. He's got, what, 2 years left on his contract? I don't believe we've offered him a new one. You know, I would assume, if I was to make the assumption, I would assume we're looking at possibly the final 12 months of Thomas Partey's Arsenal career. Okay. But I think it's, you know, maybe not. Maybe we get every extra year out of him or something like that after that, because he doesn't look like he's going beyond his peak or anything, like he's slowing down. I still think he looks terrific. I think he's been one of our best players in pre-season. And I don't think we should be doing that yet, necessarily. But I do think when he bought Rice and Havertz, that was his sort of long-term plan. That's what I think. Quite possibly. But I think Partey's just been, I think he's been absolutely terrific in pre-season. And touch wood, I don't want to jinx anything, but he looks fit. He looks really fit. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like sometimes the Partey at the base, we're always like, we don't want to overexert him there. So, you know, let's bring him off after 60 or 70. Do you know, we used to always say that we can't play Partey for 90.
Yeah,
he's playing right back, which is a lot more taxing on his body. Mm-hmm. And he's looking really strong and fit, you know. And I'm almost watching this Monday game going, oh, maybe we need to rest him on Saturday, because I think it's an early kickoff Saturday, isn't it?
Is it three
or is it the early kickoff? You might be right. You might be right, but it's still a relatively quick turnaround. Yeah, you're right. It's a 3 p.m. game. Sorry. So I'm looking at that, but he does look fit for Thomas Partey. You know,
he's really
riding out, which is really, really good. And he's had a full pre-season, which has really helped. But yeah, it's been brilliant. But Neil, overall, really good performance. Obviously, not been pummeling the goal or anything like that. I think it's 3 goals, 1 concede, but big to get a clean sheet. We had a really good record of getting clean sheets away from home last season.
Away from home, yeah.
It has a little bit of a knock-on effect on the home ability to be able to do that. I thought it was big for Ramsdale. I thought he was pretty faultless again, and he knows he has to be with David Raya sitting there on the bench watching his every move, which is pretty incredible just to watch. You're like, oh God, what's going to happen here? But But predictions for Fulham, 3 p.m. game. Sorry, I thought it was an early game again. They've had a little bit of a tough start. They lost Mitrovic. I get the feeling they might come in for one or two of our players, Balogun being one of them. So that'll be interesting to see how that develops. Hopefully, Neil, another win. But what's your prediction and what's your first score?
Yeah, I think we have to win because we got a real tough run after that. We need to get maximum points in the first three games. So I would suggest that we will win. I'm praying for a clean sheet. So whatever my prediction is going to be, there's going to be a zero for them. So I'm going to go 3-0. Actually, I think we'll score a few goals in this game. I think we've settled now after the first two, and I think we'll win 3-0. And I'm gonna do a bit of a weird one. I think I'm gonna go with the defender. No, actually, you know what? I'll go Rice. Rice first scorer, 3-0.
Wow, Rice first scorer. That'll be a picture. Mm. Fingers crossed. I hope for your prediction. We've got to win. I'll go 2-0, and I'll go Eddie. I feel like he's, nice. This is you. Maybe he'll get it back in this game. And that'll be really interesting. Hopefully, before then, obviously, one thing before we go, the transfer window's closing. And I think we still got a little bit of time after this game. So I expect the transfer window for us to go mental after Saturday's game because we've still got Pepe was back in training today. We've still got 7 or 8 players you could count. Holding, Pepe, Tierney, Sambi Lokonga, Nuno Tavares. Cedric to get off the books. I think all those that I just mentioned will go, to be honest. Holding, you can maybe say 50-50, but I think they're all probably going to go. Hopefully it allows us to bring one more in. If it does, Neil,
Do you see that, though?
Also, Balogun was another one. If we get those off the books, if we get Holding, Tavares, Tierney, Sammy Lokonga, Cedric, Tavares, Balogun off the books, I think maybe we can do one more addition.
What position would you see it?
I'm very 50-50 on whether it's a defender or the right winger. My dream tells me I want it to be the attacking player, the shiny new toy. But my head tells me that Mikel Arteta, knowing how much he loves to spend on defenders, it might be a defender. What I pray for really in this window is no surprise sales like a Gabriel or anything like that.
I don't think so now.
Not now. And I think if we do all of that, Neil, we get money in for Balogun and a little bit in for one or two of the other players. Maybe we can do one.
Wow. When's it close?
It closes September 1st. It's really after this weekend. It will be mental for everybody because a lot of those players are going to leave. Whether it's just like a loan or whatever. Yeah. So it will be mental. I don't know. What do you think? You think we can do another deal?
I hope so. I'm all for bolstering the squad. I mean, that's even if Timber wasn't injured, I'd still say, yeah, we'd love it to get one more in. Why not? Why not?
We're building more likely a defensive player or an attacking player?
I'm 50-50. Like you, I'd love to see another attacking player. As you said, it's a new toy, isn't it? Something different. But I think, given with what's happened to Timber, I would probably edge towards the defensive side for me.
Yeah, which might be alone or something like that.
Yeah, alone maybe. Yeah, like Raya. Yeah, well, Raya's not alone. We all know he's not alone. That's rubbish. That's definitely a perfect time. I think he'll go towards a defender. But what do I know? Who knows?
You never know.
We might get one of each. We might get two more. Who knows?
Yeah. If there was a surprise leave, not including all the players I just mentioned, who do you think it could be? Because I've got this dangling feeling that Smith Rowe could go.
I don't want to think
and
about that.
That's my theory. My theory is that if we did sign an attacking player, he would go. That's my theory. And that's where I'm kind of like, is it going to be? Because I don't think the numbers add up in attacking sense. Like if we add another attacking player to the mix, where are the minutes for Vieira, Smith Rowe, and Nelson? Someone's going. Do you know what I mean? So that's
about Vieira.
Right. I mean, where is it? No. You're worried about Trossard getting minutes. They're another level down. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I know there's still games to come, a lot of games to come, but that's a lot of minutes to share around, not a lot of minutes to share around for that amount of players. So I just think, he's, you know, Arteta, though, he always surprises you in the window. He's going to do something where you're just like, well, didn't see that coming. And well, I think he might do something in that sense. I could see a surprise out, but I just hope it's a player that's not a Gabriel where I feel should be starting or something like that.
No, not Gabriel, but I'll be heartbroken if he's Smith Rowe. I'll be heartbroken. I really will, Jack, because I think he hasn't, ever since his injury, he's not had a chance to really show what he can do.
What if we loaned him? What if we loaned him and nothing, you know, there's, you know, he's got a solid contract with a club, but we're like, we're not going to give him any minutes or enough minutes. We loan him to a Premier League club, can't play again.
Only if he's going to come back, I'll be all right. I'll be kind of all right with that.
Yeah, I would be all right with that as well. If we felt he was only going to get 600 minutes this season.
Yeah.
You know, we could loan him to a Fulham or someone, you know, a side where we know he's going to play every week.
Get time. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind, and it meant bringing someone else in, of course, but I thought that way. I just that one just keeps popping up in my mind. I keep thinking
it's just one player. I just want to see him get a good run, and if it doesn't work out, then fine. He's had his chance, but there's just something about him that tells me that would be disastrous if we got rid of him completely. It would hurt me a lot. It would hurt me a lot. Just two quick questions to you very quickly, because I don't know. Do we know if Timber's, has he had his operation yet? Do you know anything?
Yeah, it's weird. I would have thought he would have had his op by now, but I've not. See, players usually post something, you know, from the hospital bed or walking around on crutches or something like that. I don't think I've seen anything from him. I can't think of a real reason why they delay it, unless there's a hell of a lot of swelling and waiting for that to come down, but they would have probably got that down with treatment. Okay. So I expect he would have had his op by now. So be in the recovery process already.
But you've heard nothing.
I've not heard if he's had his op. The club didn't announce that he'd had his op. They just kind of announced what. But again, he might, you know, because he's only just moved from Holland. We might allow him to do a lot of the stuff back in Holland. You know, maybe he's allowed to go back for a little bit or something like that. We did that with Koscielny in the past. People like that, didn't we? They allowed him to go back home and stuff like that. So I don't know on that one. I'd be interested. Do you have another question?
And Jesus,
he's definitely back in sort of rehab training. When it happened, I was optimistic about, or very overly optimistic about, maybe he could make the United game. I think that would be pretty optimistic at this point as well. I expect it's like, because I think the United game happens and then it's the international break, isn't it? I think that's right. So I expect it's a post-international break thing.
Okay.
That's what
I
expect.
Because
then he'll have, you know, he'll have a week or two of training and we'll be able to get him back into the squad from there. Fingers crossed we don't need him beforehand. But Neil, it's been great pleasure. Gone a little bit over again. You're a top man. You can follow us at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. You can obviously subscribe to us, please, on YouTube. That'd be amazing. Or if you listen to us on the podcast apps, which I believe Anthony is telling me, our editor, that all, you know, tons of our listeners come through the Apple Podcasts and Spotify podcast streams. But give us a review on there. That'd be really helpful. I think that helps us. A 5-star review, of course, please. We try to do one a week. We try to do one every post game. We don't do a pre game one, but we try to do every post game so we can discuss what's going on. It's 2 wins out of 2. Let's make it 3 out of 3 come Saturday, and we'll be back after it. Up the Arsenal, Neil. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.